Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Hello everyone and welcome to our Christmas edition of The Ruck, the rugby podcast from The Times and Sunday Times. Everyone's turned up in a jolly festive mood. Steve Jones is in his Santa outfit, which is an unusual sight. Today we have the triumphant return of the Dog Man, the Prince of Fleet Street Freelancers, Adam Hathaway. Adam, your greyhounds in action this weekend?
No, we're actually out of dogs at the moment. We've got to buy a new one because the last one's had to retire. And is now a pet of one of my mates.
Oh, do you get compensation for that?
When you say retire, are you sure he hasn't been eased off the planet? He's still going.
Well, they're still going, yeah.
Okay, all right.
He's in my mate's front room.
All right.
He's still got a life, has he?
Yeah, excellent. Good. That's good effort.
And that was the voice of Michael Elwin, who we welcome back, the co-author of one of the most fascinating rugby books of the year, Unholy Union, When Rugby Collided with the Modern World, which analyses the state of the professional game today. And suggests it's make or break time for the sport.
Indeed.
Pretty good.
Happy Christmas.
Pretty good summary.
Alex, by the way, where's Lol? Where's Lawrence?
Oh,
where's Lawrence? I'm
no,
here.
He's not here again. What's his excuse this time?
I think he's still stuck on the Tokyo, the ever reliable Tokyo train system.
Okay.
Failed him.
All right. Well, at least we haven't got anyone.
Where's
who
Slotty?
Can...
Is Slotty?
Well, Slotty's not here again.
Another week off.
It's loyalty is.
They are going to miss...
Treasonable. Yeah.
They're going to miss the Ruck's Christmas party, because what we have today are crackers, mince pies, and a bottle of bubbly, which I'm not certain is allowed to be opened in the TalkSport studios where we are, but I'm going to go under the desk and do it anyway.
Okay, all right.
Skilled hand can do it.
So, I'm going to hand around some mince pies for everybody.
Excellent.
And I think we should open a cracker.
Right, go on then.
No. Thank you very much.
Nominate a joke. Go on, Josie, I'll do it with you.
All right. All right. Yeah, well done.
Another try to damp
squid. Is that a bang? Mike, I'm ready? With you.
Oh, there we go.
Pretty substandard crackers.
Jones, you have to take off your Santa hat and put on your cracker hat.
Okay.
Go on then, Jones. Give me this one, will you?
Okay. Here you go, mate.
Right.
Yeah. Oh. Another.
Go on, well,
nothing. Look at the gift I've got. A cheese grater. The belter.
I got some playing cards.
All right.
Have we got jokes?
I've got jokes. Nothing.
I don't know what this is.
I've got a joke. Hold on, read it out.
Read it out. Well, I pop this
it's
open.
It's quite a good one, actually. Premiership Rugby. Limited. It's bloody funny, that is, honestly. You can't get much bigger joke than that. Come on,
Jack. My joke. Premiership Rugby, we're going to move our final in 2021.
Oh,
absolutely
gosh.
Laughable.
Yeah.
The standard of jokes has improved around here.
I'll tell you
they?
What, they're better. Go on then, what's yours?
Well, I haven't got anything. You clean me out.
Oh, sorry,
you?
Mate. Hang on.
There we go.
Here's one. Open. It says, wash thoroughly in warm soapy water before first use.
Is that me?
Yeah. Well, it's not very funny either, is it?
No, what vegetable don't you want on a boat?
A leek.
There you go.
It's obvious.
Yeah, standard cracker joke.
Okay.
Right, I'm pouring the bubbly. Should we... Where did everyone go at the weekend? I was with Adam at London Irish Bath on Sunday.
I went to Surrey's Bristol as well on Saturday.
Leicester, Exeter for me.
I went to Surrey's and Bristol and I made a big day of it because Alfred Adam Hathaway left home. I said, how far away is your place? It's about 10 minutes. 3¾ hours later, in the far northeast of London, I dropped him off.
Well, we did have a pit stop.
But we had a pit
stop. At the old Shillelagh, was it?
I invite him for a drink. The only trouble is when I got in there and ordered them, I didn't have any money on me, so we had to pay for them as well.
That old trick.
Anyway, Sarri's, and Sarri's was just an epic place to be.
Was
Adam,
it?
Adam, I think I'm right in saying.
No, but the last hour they were absolutely untouchable.
Some of the stuff they played was just majestic. I mean, Bristol are second in the table. Sarri's are obviously bottom of the table because of the sanction against them. But they were brilliant. They played as if under no pressure, although I'm sure they are under pressure. The Vunipolas were remarkably good. I think everyone's just wondering if they're a degree or two down. They were remarkably good. Whole team played some great stuff. And there were two names to mention in particular. That's Max Malins at fullback, who's normally a fly half, but he was at fullback. And Ben Earl at flanker. And when you get someone as measured as Mark McCall comparing Max Malins to Bowden Barrett, then you've got a player. So it was one of those games that make you sort of joyous about rugby.
Yeah, I've heard him make similar comparisons before because he sees Malins as a 15 who can ultimately play fly half, doesn't he?
He does. I mean, I don't know what you thought, Adam, but he's just one of those brilliant footballers. And let's be fair, he's played fullback against Munster and against Bristol, two big pressure games. He's the third choice fullback, in effect. But he just had all the talents. He had nous, and he inspired Saracens. I mean, some of the attacking back play they did was tremendous. It was really, really good.
Well, when you think they've got Liam Williams and Alex Good both injured, and with the greatest respect to two brilliant players, they haven't really been missed.
Well, we were writing this week about Liam Williams leaving next season. You think, well, he's leaving behind Alex Good, Max Malins, and Elliot Daly, all of whom.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Elliot Daly as well. I mean, is Max Malins going to do an Alex Good and actually never go back to playing fly half? He reminds me so much of Alex Good, only with the added twist of serious pace.
Yeah.
So, God knows Alex Good's done a decent enough job at fullback. Maybe that's what Malins is going to end up as.
Alex Good apparently is still celebrating the last. That's why he's not playing.
That's
It's a difficult thing, Alex, because when you're a free running 15, it's difficult when you've got to suddenly come in to pilot the whole thing from 10, which Farrell does so well, you know. Yeah. So it's difficult. But look, when you've got the talent, you know, as they always said to me when I played, if you've got the talent, you're gonna go far.
How far did the you better.
Go? Sorry?
How far did your talent
Newport
take?
I went. That's as far as I went.
I think we might touch on it with the salary cap review conversation, but you look at Max Malins and you look at Ben Earl, who such had an outstanding season, and the Saracens Academy just keeps rolling out these top class players, and then you hear Mark McCall saying we may have to change our strategy at the Saracens because if these players go on and make the same step up that Owen Farrell and Maritoji made, they'll become very expensive very quickly, and then it becomes very hard to keep them. And it's an issue for the Premiership and maybe something for this review that we'll probably talk about later. That how are clubs incentivized to produce players when ultimately they might not be able to keep them?
Yeah, and currently the maximum is $80,000 for an all singing, all dancing, homegrown international. 80 grand these days doesn't get you an awful lot as a replacement for, you know, more than half the season, really, certainly in the Premiership. So, this heavy hitter, whoever he is, reviewing the thing, is no doubt going to look at that, I would have thought.
Yeah. God, I've seen these heavy hitters before.
And McCall is expecting that sooner rather than later.
Yeah, he'll have Ben Earl, I'd have thought, in the England Six Nations squad, which will be announced in January, and maybe one or two others, maybe Tompkins or a Milo or a... Not a Milo, sorry. Maybe a Nick Tompkins or a Max Malins or a Nick Ezekwe, as you say. He's had a really good...
I think Ezekwe is playing out of his skin. It's a huge problem, Alex, because, you know, say you're a great, young, promising academy player like Malins and and these guys who are just coming through. It's the same with Maro Itoje. I mean, Maro must have gone from something like 20 grand a year to 250 or whatever in about a week.
Yeah, what do you do with that?
And the thing is, you don't, as Mike says, you get compensation, but some of that goes to this smoothing out thing where you've got to donate it to other people. And, you know, if you're going to produce England players, you've got to give more leeway to the clubs. You've got to give more finance to them, and you've got to give more incentive. Otherwise, people are going to do what Steve Diamond, understandably, has done at Sale, and that is just bringing a load of South Africans. Because during the Six Nations, Sale are going to be dangerous because they'll have their full, their normal team out.
Did you see Sale's game against Northampton?
I didn't, no. I was at Leicester, which was an event in itself. I mean, it really was a... The first 20, I mean, the irony is, the story of it almost was Leicester, because they looked $1 million for 20 minutes. And then, sure sign of an institution in trouble off the field, it just evaporated. It was extraordinary. I mean, obviously, Exeter played a big part in that, and Exeter are one team like Saracens that you'd never beat until you've beaten them. And they just coolly played their way back in. Leicester, I wouldn't say they fell apart, but they didn't play another shot. Because they were unplayable, and they've got the personnel to be unplayable, which makes this whole relegation question, I think it's still live, and I don't think Saracens are quite out of it, out of the woods yet. Well, they're certainly not out of the woods yet, but, I mean, they are, at the moment, making dramatic inroads in that deficit. But, you know, Leicester will beat people at Welford Road and probably away from Welford Road. Wasps will probably start finding some form when they settle after the World Cup. You know, there's a lot still to be played for. And that's three of the biggest names, probably the three biggest names in English rugby vying to go down. But, you know, but anybody could. I mean, London Irish is still not.
Yeah,
are they? And they did look a little bit off it this weekend.
When you say Leicester and Wasps will start winning, they're going to need to, because Saracens aren't going to stop winning. And they're not going to stop winning well. And they've eaten pretty much half of that deduction up already. And I would say that Leicester and Wasps are probably looking at and hoping that London Irish have a bit of a slide. What do you reckon, Alan? You were there yesterday.
Well, we talk about Saracens being in trouble with England's England call-ups. I mean, Leicester could conceivably have... I mean, they had six at the World Cup. Probably four of those would be retained, the Six Nations, so they're going to miss them as well. So they're banging the mire.
Yeah. I think it just shows that really, however horrible it is to be involved in the relegation battle, what it gives to the league, because it's going to be tremendous. The thing is about Saracens, as Mike sort of suggests, I don't think they're quite out of the wood, because they are going to lose a lot of players for a lot of the games. Now, usually there is one team that is palpably the worst in the league. You know, London Welsh once won 1 point, and London Irish were well behind. This time there's not. I'm not saying there are any great teams above them, but Leicester and Wasp, for instance, and London Irish could actually win a couple. That puts more pressure on Sarri. So it's going to be a heck of a battle. But I think London Irish were going well until yesterday. I went down to see them last week. I was really impressed by the way they were all got together. But Saracens are not going to go away, and they're going to be. They might lose one or two. They might, but you know, it's going to be a heck of a battle all the way, which is only good.
I thought I was at Bristol London Irish, where London Irish got, secured a draw, and they played with real spirit and fight and a sort of togetherness that didn't seem almost possible. Certainly not natural for a squad that's just been collected from all different corners of the world without a real core to it. But they fought for a draw at Bristol, who are still flying high and certainly were then. There's no fight at all on yesterday.
They were absolutely battered up front and battered out wide.
It was calamitous. They were chucking balls on the floor, and Stephen Miler's bizarre cross kick, which was so short, it went backwards and it bounced before it was intercepted. And
it's one of those things where you know on a Sunday you curse teams, because it was explained to me by the great Blair Cowan what they do. And how they get this polyglot lot together, and it was very inspiring, because they've got stuff up on the wall, and they got a huge global map I don't know why I'm telling all the listeners this, because you should have been reading the Sunday Times, so I'm going to tell you anyway. This is the last time I'm going to do this. They had a global map with a little logo as to where all the players came from. So you had England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Nigeria, the three Pacific nations, Tonga, Samoa, Fiji. And it was very affecting, and they sort of walk by this every day. And what they call themselves is the misfits, because they just come from all around the world. Sadly, for Blair, who I just found a magnificent bloke, it didn't work for them yesterday. And they have got to keep on claiming points from somewhere, because if they do stay up, they reach a watershed, because they're going to Brentford next year, Brentford Community Stadium, 17,000. They're linking up with all their diaspora all over Britain, and they could really, really become a big club. But not if they go down this year.
I think we look at, it's Christmas time, and we're thinking halfway through the season, we've got a good idea of where everyone is. But actually, we're only six rounds in, and there is a long way to go. But I having said that, I did sit at the Medeski yesterday and look at the table, and just there's some slight daylight between, I mean, Bath won, which put them above London Irish. They're now 7 points ahead of Wasps, with Leicester behind them, and then a 6 point gap, London Irish, which is not insignificant even this early, I don't think.
Well, especially not with the way they're playing, those two teams. Yeah. If I Wasps and Leicester, I'd be looking over my shoulder, because there's a big machine coming for them. They've got a target on their backs.
The thing is with Wasps, you know, they've made a great success of their transition to Ricoh Stadium. But it's obvious, and Lawrence has said this on the Ruck, that they have to look after their finances a little bit, and they've not really spent much on players. And when you consider that 2 years ago they had, you know, Kirtley Beale, Christian Wade, Danny Cipriani, Christian Wade... And a very powerful pack. They just do not appear to have done that this time. And they're going to have to get that. Dai Young's going to have to get that lot in winning form really rapidly.
The signing of Lehman Sopawanga hasn't worked for them. Malachi Fekitoa as an outside centre probably isn't the answer at the moment. As good a player as he is, they've lost really promising young players through injury. I spoke to Alex Reader last week, who spent 2 years trying to get back, and didn't. They lost Sam Jones a couple of years ago too. You're right, they do have budgetary constraints which are affecting them, and their big signings haven't really worked, and they've lost a Cipriani, who they let go. They've lost a Willie LaRue, who came to the end of his contract.
Cooper Woolley, big loss,
who they haven't really replaced. And Dai Young looked pretty shattered after that game. But they are still getting crowds. And so, you know, although they're struggling in the table, they get 25,000 for the Harlequins game, I think.
Yeah.
Which is almost 10 times the amount they were getting.
I don't know how many tickets they give away, though.
You don't know.
But the thing is, I've never been bothered about giving away tickets, Jack. If you give 5,000 tickets away, well, you've got 5,000 potential people to come next time, you know. But we get in free as well, don't forget.
Oh, yeah.
But look, the thing is with Danny, I mean, I'm sure Dai must think this now. I wouldn't expect him to admit it. When he lost Danny, he lost Christian Wade, he lost Elliot Daly, because those guys were loving the way they played. Yeah. And I think that when Danny went, they not only did they really, really waste their money on Sopoanga, God bless him, I think they lost the whole shape and the verve and the brilliance of the team.
Well, that was the boy band, wasn't it? Those boys.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. What boy bands, you know, by the way?
Ooh.
Shadows?
Take That. They were one, weren't they?
They were one, yeah. Cliff Richard and the Shadows. Gloucester boy band. Yeah, all right.
And Danny was playing for Gloucester on Friday night, who kind of battered Worcester for the whole first half. And it was, I thought Worcester did pretty well to hang on, actually. Their defence looked strong. And then Gloucester did what they'd actually done when I was down there for the Connacht game, where they could easily have been well clear at half-time but weren't, and then cut loose second half and scored 5 tries, and Lou Rhys-Zammit just looks like $1 million for them.
Absolutely. They looked like Gloucester in the second half. They really did. They really did.
You've done me up like a kipper there, Arthur, but I'll...
why?
We'll come to that later.
But he does look, you know, he's an 18-year-old Welsh wing.
He looks fantastic, yeah.
All the pace in the world.
Yeah.
Well, it just goes to show you don't have to be... I mean, you know, we talk about London Irish looking like proper contenders 1 week, and then the next, whatever happened this weekend, mind's not in the right place maybe, or who knows what was going on behind the scenes, and you cop a big beating. And, you know, same you'd say with Worcester at Gloucester, you know, it belies the fact that it was 3-3 after whatever it was, 58, 59 minutes. I mean, it was a proper game, but then you look at the final score and you think, well, that's another hiding. And Worcester will probably use that to inspire them for next week, and they will quite possibly inflict a similar hiding on somebody else who might not, for whatever reason, be quiet on it. And so it will go on. I mean, some of the points differences in the Premiership are amusing to watch. I don't know why, but I always think it's quite instructive looking at points differences as much as it is the points on the table. But, you know, you got Bristol up there in third. They're on -3 points difference, in fact. And the side with by far the biggest points difference, of course, is Saracens on +71. So that's instructive of a league where, you know, wild results can happen at any given time. And I suppose the key is how you handle that. I think most sides are perfectly capable of using these heavy defeats as motivation to, you know, get a performance the following week. And it just makes it all, you know, very interesting to watch.
Do you know what? I was just going to say, there was someone on the TV, on the radio the other day, complaining about the Premiership and all that. You know, I think you had to be there at the start to realise what it is now. You know, and I was there at the start in 1833. But you really, you know, we used to go to matches where there were like 800, 900 people there. Yeah. The Premiership now, like Friday night, you might see one great game every week. Friday night we saw an excellent game. Saw a couple more yesterday. Leicester, London Irish, maybe not the great one, but the sort of atmosphere at Saracens, with even with half the ground not being used, and the way, the passion about it, and the test match intensity, which is what the way Pat Lamb described it. This league, you know, it's some league, and one day when we look back, we'll realise that people like Eddie Jones, who demean it, really should shut up.
Yeah, I've never understood this. I mean, obviously it's become a kind of cliche to say that the Premiership is one-dimensional and the English teams don't know how to play. I just don't recognise that.
Rubbish.
And I haven't recognised it for years. There was a... You can chart, if you're sad enough, you can chart the tri-tally for the Premiership over its existence. And there was this extraordinary slump around about 2010... And those were dark days, sort of, I think, in those days of Vicarage Road on a wet Sunday afternoon and Borthers getting his boys together and sticking it up somebody in a most dispiritingly dull way. So I don't know what happened around about 2010. And the Six Nations as
Borthers
well.
Borthers retired, I think. That's what it was. Really.
But, it, you know, since then, it's just gone from strength to strength. And it was also, it was like that in the early years. The biggest scoring per game season was the first, I think. Or was it, well, maybe the second. Dominic Chapman ended the season on something stupid like 30-plus tries. That season was... I think it was at 98-99, was a really high-scoring season tries-wise. But we're getting back up there now, and we have been for, you know, a good 3, 4, 5 years.
Mikey Devon used to be a stato, did he?
Yeah, I'll tell you.
He's always been sad.
He's always been the stato. Yeah. Statistics, man. No, blimey.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Since last week's podcast, as we referred to a bit earlier, Premiership Rugby announced an independent review of the whole salary cap system to be undertaken by Lord Miners, a former government minister, with a view to tightening the regulations, to strengthening the budget and investigative powers available to Premiership Rugby, and potentially strengthening the punishments. What I found, one interesting areas that I found, was that he's going to look at how salary cap systems operate in other sports and other codes around the world, which to me means he'll go to the NRL in Australia and will note how Melbourne Storm had titles stripped from them when they were found guilty of salary cap breaches. He'll go to North America, where all the major sports publish the salaries of their players for transparency as a way of managing the salary cap. And if he sees how they operate and is tasked with reporting back on best practice, it's not unfeasible that he will report back and recommend that both of those things should be brought into the Premiership. That's not to say Saracens will have title strip retrospectively. It would apply going forward, but it would be a strengthening of the punishments, and of course the publishing of salaries would be an enormous shift from where we are now.
I'll tell you what, when this landed in my inbox on Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever it was, my shoulders slumped because I'm sick to death of this. But you're right, Arthur, we were talking about it off air before. If he comes up with a recommendation, this is how you're going to run the salary cap from now on, then Premiership Rugby better have a good excuse not to do it. And also, Saracens have taken it on the chin. Aside from this review, Saracens have taken all this on the chin. I just wish all the other clubs would shut up now.
Well, I think they want this review as much as anyone, because as we referred to earlier, there are definite changes I think need to be made with regards to the incentivising the production of young English players and clubs who produce Amara Bitoji, who goes from an academy contract, which can't be more than 30 grand, to being a star of the Lions in no time. It's unfair on those clubs to then be punished. So I actually think Saracens will welcome this for that reason.
Yeah, for sure.
Particularly because they've been punished for providing great players. Jonesy, I suspect you have an opinion on it.
Well, Lord Cole Miners, that's the last bloke you want. He's only going to charge a pound, apparently, which is about what it's worth. Let's go back to America. First of all, it's a totally different thing. Secondly, you can announce everybody's salary. That doesn't mean that's what you're paying them. The NFL, in the gridiron, the great fallacy over there is that what they announce is what they actually pay them. I mean, you could say, right, Maro tells you we give him 200,000. Great, there we are. It's all in public. We'll give him another 100,000 behind the scenes. It doesn't work. Secondly, in my opinion, if someone like an outstanding businessman like Nigel Ray and a really, really meteoric, brilliant man, brilliant player like Maro Itoje, if Maro Itoje wants to use Nigel Ray's business acumen, which is incredible, then that is no business of the salary cap. Yeah, I'm sorry, it is no business. And I think, I agree with you, Alex, this thing about, it's going to make it even tougher, some of the things should be loosened off, that not made tougher. And as for the penalties, the penalty that Sarri suffered was way off the planet in terms of the offences they're said to have committed. So don't make anyone who says that they should make the punishment even better is talking out their backside. And I presume, as usual, it's from the sheer jealousy of the losing teams.
I hope the bloke dressed as Father Christmas is in a better mood when he comes to your house on Christmas Day.
The recently released groundbreaking Unholy Union When Rugby Collided with Modern World has much to say on this. I mean, the thing that those other sports we mentioned who might have more punitive measures against salary cap abusers, what they all have in common is a properly binding collective bargaining agreement and a completely different way of administering their sports. And it is the big problem with the salary cap in this country. And if Saracens had really wanted to challenge it, they would have had a case. It would have been horribly messy. It would have taken years, probably, but they could have taken it higher. key with it is that the players are not signatories to the agreement. So you could argue that it is a restraint of trade, because however much all the other clubs might agree that this is how we should operate, they're still contending with a bunch of agents, basically, who are constantly jacking up the going rate for their clients and causing all this problem in the first place. I mean, the players are not signed up to the idea of the salary cap. And you talk to any director of rugby around the country, in their experience, when the salary cap goes up, all that happens is that the players' salaries go up. It doesn't mean they can make their squad stronger or bring in extra cover. It just means that the players' salaries go up. And the players' salaries, however brutal the sport they're playing, are just too high because the game can't afford them.
Mike, you should write a book on this.
Yeah, I've done it.
I think we should lighten the mood at this Christmas party. We'd play some music if we could afford the rights, but we can't. So we'll just let's look ahead, hopes and dreams for 2020. Does anyone have any? Where would you like the game to go? Ben Kay in his column this week was writing about a number of things. One of the things which was so stark to those of us who were at London Irish yesterday, where there was scrum reset after scrum reset, was the amount of time that is taking and eating up out of the game. He'd like that whole situation to be sped up, to maybe you'd have a countdown clock so that scrums have to be set in a certain time. That's one of his ideas. What do you...
Well, the trouble with that is, and this is the problem you always got with all of these questions about how we speed the game up or improve it and so on, there's a flip side to all of it, because everyone's also at the same time screaming about player welfare. And the bottom line is, if you stop the clock for a scrum, you are making the playing time of your game of rugby will... balloon beyond what it is.
I actually
now
think if you
the
stop...
collision rate will go up, it will become even more dangerous than it already is.
If you stop
is.
The clock, as he said, and I agree with it, if you stop the clock, it's actually going to take longer because there's no incentive on the players to have done any quicker.
Yeah, but a countdown clock would work.
I think countdown clock might work.
I think all I say is that it's the last 5 minutes when team in the lead suspiciously goes down every time. They should stop the clock for the last five. But Mike, there's got to be a happy medium where you get the scrum down safely. At the moment, players just standing around for ages before the evening engage. And secondly, I'd add to that, Alex, you cannot go away in a huddle and make the line-out call. You've got to go straight to the line-out and throw it in.
Yep.
My co-author, Mr. Evans, is currently chief executive of Global Rapid Rugby. Which has plenty of new measures, some
which
more
we should just,
than others.
In case anyone doesn't know, is this the innovative Andrew Forrest-based competition with...
In Perth.
In Perth.
Bonus tries and...
Yeah, if you score a try straight from your own 22 without any intermediary phases, it's worth 9 points and so on. But one of the innovations there is time limits on set pieces. So, you have to have completed the scrum in a minute. I mean, that might be a way of doing it.
I've got a wish for 2020.
Go on.
England have got a two-match tour to Japan. Can we make it 10 tests? Because we had such a good time at the World Cup, I want a longer trip there.
Will you be going back in the pod?
I don't think I'm podding all the time, because I don't think there are any in a waiter.
Right, okay.
So Adam Hathaway literally is the pod father on
the
podcast, having spent 8 weeks living in a...
In a pod.
In a pod.
Alex, in terms of next year, I'd like something to happen. People think rugby's moving. It doesn't move at all. First of all, as Michael and Mark wrote it in the book, I'd love there to be more independent officialdom, where every decision you made was not made totally for your own benefit, but was made for the benefit of the game. Mm. For instance... Has anything happened after the World Cup about Tier 1 and Tier 2, about giving any more finance to the Pacific nations? No, of course it hasn't. Everything sticks the same. Internationals, there are too many of them. That's another point. Independent and not self-centred, unself-centred officialdom should come in. And next, I think people should pay more attention to the unbelievable boom in women's and girls rugby. It is absolutely stunning. And they've got to make some difficult decisions. England and France in the Six Nations are gone way ahead of all the others. Should there be a test series and then a Six Nations B or something like that? Because it's growing so big. And you go to any club now, the amount of young girls there playing the game, it warms the heart, honestly. And I tell you what, it's... It's the rugby's got to get a grip on it. And another thing is, let's have some more administrators who are girls. Maybe that'll be one of the things that'll stop the self-centeredness. And let's have their talents and their administrative talents instead of the old goats in blazers and ties. Take that blazer off.
Not much. Yeah, well, that's very true. And we did a big, for the book, we did a survey of all the clubs around the country. We've got about 400 respondents out of 1,500. So it was quite a reflective of what's going on. And time again, they said that their adult men's section is being propped up by A, the youth sections, and B, the women's. So, I mean, those are the growth areas in the game, participation-wise. We finished the book with five easy answers, which is a bit tongue-in-cheek because actually only one of them is easy, and that one is to end the system of player capture at international level. I would like to see that just abolished.
Good idea.
I mean, what happened to Spain, for example, who, you know, were cost a place in the World Cup because of the most shameless stitch-up by World Rugby. You know, they'd agreed that two of their players who had been capped at youth level for France, France had told them they were available. Spain successfully demolished whatever it is, Article 9 or 8 or whichever one it is in the regulations of World Rugby pertaining to player capture. It was demolished by the Spanish team at the hearing, and yet they still got absolutely clobbered for playing, I think it was two players, or maybe even just one, I can't remember his name, scrum half, who had been capped at junior level for France against the wrong opposition. You got examples like Steve Shingler. I mean, he should have played for Scotland, but he wasn't allowed to because he'd played for Wales under whatever against, crucially, a particular country. And if it had been a different country, it would have been OK. I mean, it's just a nonsense. And if you qualify, and you have to qualify properly, through birth, really, and I think certainly make residential qualification much harder again than it is. I think you get to play for whoever you like.
Whoever you want, agreed. Birth or parents, I think. My dad may have moved, you know.
My hope is that when we get to June and the Premiership rugby season's up against the Lord's Test match and the European Football Championships, people realise that they don't want a rugby season that lasts from September all the way through to June. And that maybe when rugby is relegated down potentially third on the agenda, maybe lower, with the golf season coming and the tennis, lawn tennis.
And the derby.
Derby, that maybe people realise that that actually less is more and that we don't want a rugby season that lasts
and
for the
entire
year.
And it's a ridiculous idea to be playing final on June the 20th.
It is. So that's my
excellent. Athens wants his feet up by then.
So let's round off our Christmas party with our God or Goddess of the Week, our weekly feature. Athens, do you have one?
Yeah, well, we touched on this. You've stitched me up. Louis Rees-Zammit, the young kid at winger at Gloucester. He was absolutely electric the last couple of weeks. Reading the Welsh papers, they're pretty sure he's going to be at least called up to that Welsh training squad because I think they want to
capture him.
I think they want to get teeth into him before he escapes somewhere else. But he's been terrific.
No, anyone can. You can't be captured unless you're him. For Wales. look, my God of the Week for me is I've never ever named before the person I interviewed the week before, but Blair Cowan is some unbelievable bloke. He really is the sort of bloke that you get involved in rugby with for in the first place. Blair Cowan was excellent. The only other thing I'd like to do is Adam Hathaway to move nearer me, so it wouldn't take me 4 hours to drop him off and get home. But Blair Cowan, what a man.
I was dabbling with Max Malins, although I didn't see him play this week. I thought he was really good the week before against Munster. Tom Homer, I thought, Jonathan Joseph, but I think I'm going to go with Benno Ebano after his horrific injury, and he looks
good
like
one.
He's back.
He's having a really good season.
That's
isn't he?
Great.
I'm going to nominate Alex Reader as my God of the Week. Similar to Jonesy, I wouldn't probably normally nominate someone who I'd interviewed, but I phoned him up to talk to him about really why would a Premiership rugby player want to spend 2 years trying to get back just to play games. It's not for the money or the fame, and it's hopefully for the glory, but you never know. And we had an hour-long conversation in which I was staggered by the lengths that he went to, the commitment he went to in order to get back, and that was driven by a number of things, which are all, were pretty difficult for him to cope with. The fear of losing it, what he felt was his identity, the fear of the future, desperation not to just give up on the dream of playing rugby with his mates, which he articulated just brilliantly, and he put him through all sort, put himself through all sorts of hell just to try and play, and he played one game, one first team game at the start of the season, and knew on the field at the Rico that he couldn't go on, but he retired knowing that he'd given everything to the cause. And when I spoke to him, he was recovering from a third massive knee operation for to improve quality of life, and he was already out there meeting people, trying to get a new job and start a new career. So he gets my nomination.
That was a great piece, Arthur. I'm sure it's still available online. That was a really good read.
It was.
Thank you. Well, thank you, everyone. Have a great Christmas to all of you. We're going to go and finish off this bottle of bubbly. And we will be back next week with our review of the decade.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.